There are few in Africa who have not been affected by malaria. It's the number one killer of children and a chronic affliction of adults. It's preventable and treatable, but still deaths from malaria continue to rise. International donors are working on solutions, and the aid group Doctors Without Borders is taking state-of-the-art malaria treatment into remote areas. Earlier this year, NPR's Brenda Wilson spent a week with a group of their medics at an outpost in rural Nigeria.
Yenagoa is the capital of Bayelsa, a Nigerian state on the River Nun, a major tributary of the Niger River. The rain is coming down by the buckets full, scattering the staff of Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, playing a game of pickup soccer in the compound.
What do you think? Carry on or go inside?
At least two-thirds of the delta is water, year-round. The rest of it, lush vegetation. All of it infested with the Anopheles mosquito, which transmits the parasite Plasmodium falciparum, a disease that spares almost no one in the delta.
The prevalence of malaria here is incredible. It's above 80%. You know, when you test people, they've all got malaria. They're just not symptomatic.
Adam Childs has just come on as a project coordinator for Doctors Without Borders, which is here to implement a new protocol for treating malaria that the Nigerian government has been persuaded to adopt. The health ministry has decided to use artemisinin in combination with other drugs rather than the old mainstays, chloroquine and fenazidar, which have lost their effectiveness in treating malaria. Childs realizes there are more aggressive preventive measures Doctors Without Borders could take, but says the organization is limiting its role.
I guess we're just trying to keep as many people alive and healthy as possible until the state has eradicated most of the vectors by doing massive bed net distribution or cutting down weeds and getting rid of old tires which allow mosquitoes to breed. In the meantime, there's people who are sick and we just try to get them back on their feet.
The Delta is also rich in oil, but it's last on either the state or the national government's list for badly needed health care services. Childs, who has worked for other relief organizations, is used to government schemes that don't work and says it was the can-do spirit of Doctors Without Borders that appealed to him.
I wrote to them how I'd been sitting one day in Uganda in a bar having a beer, and the table is covered in red dust, the beer's covered in red dust, I'm covered in red dust, my girlfriend's covered in red dust, everything is covered in red. In the distance I saw this big white truck and it was lumbering down through the potholes like some, I don't know, some dinosaur slowly making its way down. As it passed us, it was spotless white. And I just remember seeing the little red man. I went, I want to work for someone who can keep their trucks clean in Africa.
The little red man on the side of the truck is the logo of Doctors Without Borders.
Thank you.
With conflict brewing in one area they were considering as a site for a health center, Doctors Without Borders has decided to work 2 hours up the road from Yenagoa in Egbikberi. It's on the river, but accessible by land. Word has already gotten out. As a Land Rover carrying the team pulls up in the clinic yard in Egbikberi, about 70 people, mainly mothers and children, surge forward. Community liaison Kingsley Mayenye used to work in the Human Resources Division of Smith Kline Beecham, but took a pay cut because he wanted a life of public service.
It's like a childhood dream that I really wanted to serve people who are in distress and all that. I had it in mind.
Today he assures the throng in the local dialect that everyone will get a chance to see the doctor.
We want to do health education. We want to teach on some things first before we go start to see doctor. So make everybody patient.
But most of the people are here for another reason. They've heard that Doctors Without Borders treats people for free. And most, like Esther Mayepa, a school teacher, have children who are suffering from malaria or are ill themselves. Mayepa describes a condition that she comes down with time and again each year. It feels like the flu, just worse.
I've had it several times. And I'm still feeling pains all over my body, dizziness, pains at my joints.
Economists estimate that $10 to $12 billion a year in productivity is lost in Africa because of malaria. As bad as malaria can be for adults, it is worse for children, especially children under 5. They have not yet developed an immunity or tolerance for the disease, a sort of side benefit from repeated infections for those who live where malaria is endemic. Their needs and Dr. Claire Collette's goals as she set out on a medical career 5 months ago are a match.
I just wanted to come where the need was greatest, and it just happens that the need is greatest in tropical countries.
So Doctors Without Borders sent her to the Niger Delta.
How do you know you have malaria?
In the morning, my body was so hot, hot sweat.
When is this?
In evening time, I'll feel cold.
So you can go for a malaria test, yeah? And the baby? She vomits? She eats?
She eats, but she doesn't eat well.
She taking milk? She must carry on with breast milk. Breast milk has lots of nutrients, and it will help her get better, okay?
Malaria's assault on the children of Africa begins before they're born and plagues them throughout their early years. The parasites invade the placenta and sap vital nutrients, leading to low birth weights and anemia. Repeated bouts cause severe anemia, hypoglycemia, and lower respiratory tract infections. All of these conditions can be fatal, but malaria is most devastating when it infects the brain. Children may suffer seizures or lapse into a coma and die. Survivors may experience lifelong disabilities, blindness, speech impediments, and difficulty learning.
Can you wake her up?
This is baby. See, daddy.
Was she awake earlier? Okay, she's just sleeping now. Yeah?
Were you worried that she didn't wake up?
Well, the mother said she'd been awake earlier. She was just asleep. But I always like to make sure that they can wake up. A couple of days ago when I saw 57 children, I only saw 2 smile, and that's how I judge if they're sick or not, because the children here are usually so happy and playful, and especially when they see a white person, they love me and they love to sort of play. But if they're sick, they're scared of me and they cry.
Of all the children Colette examined that day, about 60, only one did not test positive for malaria.
The children are all sick. Some of them are extremely sick and may die in the next few days, but every single one of them that I've seen need to be seen that day.
When a child becomes sick here, feverish, the disease is so commonplace it is sometimes ignored in the early stages. When fevers persist, mothers head to the local drugstore for antimalarial drugs. As a consequence of overuse and misuse, the medicines used to treat malaria in this part of the world no longer work. The parasites are resistant to them. Many countries are now switching to a treatment based on a new drug, artemisinin, but there are concerns that the same thing will happen. So Colette makes a point of explaining to mothers that not all fevers are caused by malaria.
So when we're introducing the new drugs, we insist that they have to have a positive test before we will prescribe.
Ego, who is Ego?
Besides, used alone, artemisinin takes 7 days to knock out the parasites, and there's more of a chance that people will stop taking it as soon as they feel better. In combination with other drugs, just 3 days will do the trick. Ometimi explains carefully to each patient how to take the 3 packets of medicine she gives them.
The evening, you go take one, Tomorrow morning, you take one, join. Okay. Then afternoon, you go take one.
The reason we use the combination is to prevent resistance. So the artesanate is only in the bloodstream for a very short time. It has a very short half-life. And then if there's anything else around to prevent resistance, the amodiaquine kills it. The same way you use combination for HIV and for TB.
By late afternoon, it is clear that if Colette continues to see patients individually, the team won't get back to base camp before dark. That can be risky. 2 Germans working with the oil industry were taken hostage recently by rebel groups in the area. They were released.
One by one.
Colette and Mayenyi aren't taking any chances. They want to get out quickly, so they set up a kind of triage, moving at panic pace to determine which patients it's safe to put off seeing until the next week.
Body they hot. Okay, it's not hot.
Okay, you bring him Monday.
Monday morning, come.
down to the wire.
One toddler is completely listless. Grabbing a local health worker, Colette tells her to determine if the mother can get the child to a hospital immediately.
She needs to go today, yeah?
Don't frighten the mother, she says, but it's important that she understands that the child may die if she doesn't receive a blood transfusion.
Try to take her to the hospital, eh? No fear, yeah?
The malaria parasites live in the red blood cells, and they reproduce and they break out of the red blood cells. So the cells they have broken out of are no longer useful for carrying hemoglobin, which carries oxygen around the body. So when the child is severely anemic, it's not getting enough oxygen. And this child that we're talking about, it was breathing quite fast because that was the only way to try and increase the oxygen into its bloodstream. And the most important organs are the brain and the kidneys. They get the damage the quickest. So you need to get some fresh blood into the body as soon as possible so that oxygen can be carried around.
Colette says they would have taken the mother and child to the hospital if they had had no other way of getting there. It's 4 o'clock and the bedraggled crew piles into the Land Rover to head back to Yanagoa.
What time is it?
10 to 4.
Oh, that is so much earlier than I expected. I thought we'd be leaving about 7.
It was great.
Kingsley Mayenyi grew up in Bayelsa State.
Yeah, if MSF is not here, then we'll go back to what was operating here before we arrived. There were no drugs, no equipment. So it was basically the nurse that was really going to buy drugs and sell, consult and all that. So, yeah, they go back to that.
But it will be back to medicine cabinets that are temporarily filled with malaria drugs and other supplies. The clinic yard in Igbikbiri is empty. Children are playing soccer in a nearby field. The chaos of the morning and the clamor of fretting children has been stilled until the clinic doors open for another week of emergency care. Eventually, patient traffic will slow, and Doctors Without Borders will look for another place that needs their help. Brenda Wilson, NPR News.
Global health coverage continues tonight with Rx for Survival, a television special on PBS.